And good morning. Hi, welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Somebody left the television on here at the station. I can look over my shoulder. Oh boy, that's some serious wind and rain. Oh my word. Be a good time to pray for everybody. I can see it on the Fox News right now. All right. This program, obviously, I want to use my energy, whatever I can do to help you improve your health. It does help, though, if a person's willing to learn and they want to improve their health. Now, got a whole bunch of things that I can share with you, but I always like sharing things that I find interesting. And let me read this to you. This is adapted from Herbal Antiseptic Oils Beet Disinfectants for Inhibiting Superbug Infections. And that comes from greenmedinfo.com. Okay. This is for your consideration. To fight these, and I know you know this already, I mean, just about every single week, I hear another story of a person that becomes resist, or they're treated with antibiotics, and they don't work. These bugs sometimes become resistant to the point of they're not going to go ahead and be nice and die. Wouldn't that be horrible to have like a C. diff infection or staph or E. coli? And you just can't even budget? That's going to be extremely disconcerting. What if you're in a hospital or nursing home and you can't even touch this stuff? Well, listen to this right here. To fight antibiotic-resistant bacteria, or sometimes they're just called superbugs, the pharmaceutical industry continues to create ever stronger and more dangerous drugs. Meanwhile, researchers are studying the superior antiseptic abilities of certain plant oils to avoid bacterial growth in the first place. In a recent study they found that oils derived from tea tree, lemongrass, and eucalyptus, they outperformed hospital antiseptics, chlorhexidine, and ethanol, which is rubbing alcohol, in inhibiting the growth of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Doesn't everybody have a bottle of alcohol at the house? So if they get a cut or a scrape or a wound or a sore, or maybe there's an insect bite, don't you clean it with that or hydrogen peroxide? Isn't that disconcerting to try to clean a wound, but it just won't heal from infection? The researchers tested these and other plant oils against the most deadly superbugs, including Klebsiella pneumoniae, MRSA, which stands for methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, Escherichia coli, or sometimes it's called E. coli for short, and the multi-drug-resistant Pseudomonas aeruginosa. They didn't include one called Enterobacter, but I'm reading more and more about Enterobacter not responding to modern antibiotics. They measured the zone of inhibition, which is the distance to which the substance will repel bacteria and thereby prevent bacterial activity, which, how long have I known about this? 30 years. I don't know any physicians. You know, it's just maddening sometimes. I had a lady yesterday, and when I examined her, she was telling me she felt this pressure across her bladder. And it's been going on for 4 months now, and she went to the doctor, and she complained about it. And I said, well, did they do a culture? No, they didn't do a culture. I mean, how hard is that to do, to get a urine specimen and to put it in a nutrient auger petri dish, put it in the incubator, and just see if there's any toxic form of bacteria that's growing that's causing these symptoms? No, that wasn't done. I said, what about a urinalysis? She said, well, that was just perfectly fine. Now, normally, I wouldn't think too much of that, but what if a person has symptoms of some kind, like there's pressure across my bladder, it doesn't feel right, my attention's constantly drawn to that area, I know something's wrong. That makes me think the urinalysis may just be a false negative, which I wish I could tell everyone with a bladder infection or a kidney infection that you just have a whole lot of symptoms. Sometimes you don't have a lot of symptoms, but it's not in your best interest to harbor a chronic low-grade infection that never goes away, that literally will become a stressor or a strainer or burden to your immune system. It just doesn't resolve and go away. Anyway, someone's trying to call. That's probably more important. Let's go to that. Sorry, I had to push the button three times to get it to go.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi, Dr. Morgan here.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. My sister has a three-year-old granddaughter that has been diagnosed with alopecia, and I was wondering what she needs to be doing to help this child.
Well, let me just tell you the first thing that pops into my mind. Three-year-old that has alopecia, the first thing that I would consider, and of course I could be wrong, is just an allergy to wheat.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I'm just telling you, of all the kids that I've seen with alopecia, I would say that over half of them, it's a wheat allergy or an autoimmune reaction. So the quicker that we try that, the quicker we get results. Now, is it just universal all over, or is it just in one area?
Oh, I didn't ask her about that.
Well, did she describe it to you at all?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can always call her back and ask her. So if she, if you call her back and say, you know what, I was thinking about the hair loss and the, what's the little girl's name, by the way?
Amberly.
That is a new name for me. I haven't heard that name before.
She has a twin named Kimberly.
But Kimberly doesn't have hair loss, right?
No.
Well, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that can cause hair loss. The kid doesn't have ringworm and doesn't have a scalp and or a fungal infection, does Amberly?
I don't think so. Well, she was born with, what's that skin disorder?
Eczema?
Yes.
Well, see, no, I'm not laughing at that because it's funny, but I mean, that makes my job easy. That's an autoimmune reaction.
Okay.
So, do you know whether or not the mother of the twins has any skin conditions at all?
I don't think she has any.
Well, I just want you to be open to the possibility that maybe this is a very mild autoimmune reaction that's being manifest as hair loss. But eczema is, you know, there's only about 7.5 million Americans that have it right now. But that means your immune system is attacking its own flesh, which is not what you want. So what we have to do with her is we have to find out what the trigger is. And I would say probably 80% of the time with eczema, it's almost always dairy, a dairy reaction. So I know I popped off and said wheat, but when it comes to eczema, just my own observations and research, I would probably say there's a strong 80% correlation to dairy products being a trigger that causes your immune system to overproduce antibodies, and if those antibodies, along with the dairy protein, settle near the scalp, the immune system sends white blood cells to that area and starts to attack it, and then in the process of doing so, it kills the hair follicles momentarily, but they will completely come back to life. We just have to find out what the trigger is. So that's what I would do.
All right. I sure will tell her.
I hope that helps.
I hope so, too.
Yes.
Is there anything topical that she can do for her?
She could try castor oil. Olive oil, just to calm it down, see if that helps.
Okay.
Sometimes you can put clay packs on there. You know what a woman told me this week? She said, or last week? She said she's taking the bentonite clay and she's just adding olive oil to it. And so she's making like this mud pack. And when she applies it to her skin, she says that's what makes it the soft. And she's trying to treat a rash. Which I'm all for very simple, low-tech remedies that are safe without side effects. And olive oil and clay, that kind of qualifies for super safe. So even a three-year-old, they'd probably love the idea of smearing mud all over their head and then wash
it. Oh, I bet.
I think, you know what I think you should do? I think you should go to the house today and take mud and olive oil with you, and you should just show them how it's done.
All right. That sounds great.
Besides, you're a little girl at heart anyway, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Good. Well, I hope that helps. Let me know.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Have a great
Bye-bye.
Day.
You too.
Bye.
All right. If you'd like to join me on the program, there's a number open at 903-586-5257. So the discussing herbal antiseptics, but we'll go back to the phone lines. All right, I did it right this time. Good morning, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
I've been better.
Well, how can you be helped? How do you want to be helped?
Well, first of all, my concern is more with my husband than myself. He's got blisters on his leg, and we're kind of thinking it's...
it's not shingles, is it?
That's what we're thinking, but would that start on their legs?
Well, it just depends on where the nerve root is attacked or affected.
Mm, okay.
And so if it's that nerve that goes down the leg, but let me say this a little bit differently. If somebody, and this is just an idea, let's just say somebody has this band of blisters that are painful and uncomfortable. It's
mm-hmm.
going from the middle of the breastbone all the way to the outside over the center of the chest. Well, that would represent what's called the T4 dermatome. So you're going to have a nerve that comes between the fourth and fifth thoracic vertebra, or around the fourth level. And so if the nerve is just attacking that nerve root, it's going to follow exactly that nerve pattern. That's where it goes. So when it comes to the leg and the nerves, those dermatomes are much longer, and they run the course of the leg. So is this just a very short little patch, or is it longer?
It's a long patch just underneath his knee.
Does it go on the front or the side of the leg?
Yes.
Does it cross over the shin bone?
Huh?
Does it cross over the shin bone? Like from left to right?
Yes.
Okay. Is he in pain?
Yes.
Well, that's kind of a dumb question. Sorry about that. Well, you know what? It could be just as simple as shingles. And so,
okay.
All right. Can I give you some ideas?
Please.
All right. If you can go to the store and find some what's called raw honey, you got nothing to lose. Raw honey is fabulous. But you could easily try putting raw honey directly on those lesions to see if, because what you want is you want them to go from fluid filled blisters to crusty scabs.
Okay.
I know it sounds weird over the radio to say I'm hoping your husband gets crusty scabs by nightfall, but I'm hoping he gets crusty scabs
because I'm ready to get him. Yeah.
Because that means his immune system's responding to it.
Right.
If you could go to the store and pick up what's called B12, sublingual B12.
Okay.
Oh, would I give him I would try to overdose him on it.
I like the sound of that.
And the good news is, if he does overdose, there's no side effects. He's not going to have to go to the ER. So what I would do is I would get some sublingual B12, just get a high potency.
Uh-huh.
And I would probably suck on one of those tablets every 15 minutes. Even if the bottle says one a day.
Uh-huh.
No. We have a choice here.
Okay.
We can either give the nerves and the immune system what they need to repair themselves, or we can just say, hey, this doesn't, my doctor didn't recommend this. No. Go ahead and do that. The other thing is, I want everyone to remember that your body can always fight infections as long as it has ample vitamin C to do so.
Uh-huh.
And so if you don't have enough vitamin C, this is where you're going to have a problem right there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, but the poor guy, he's probably been dealing with a fair amount of stress, hadn't he?
Yes, he has.
Because usually emotional stress is the number one predictor if someone's going to get shingles.
Yeah.
And so
he just lost his father.
Oh, that's just horrible. I mean,
and we just didn't see.
You know how stressed I was when my father died?
Yeah.
I fell to pieces for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It was very hard on me. So yeah, I'm very sympathetic.
I know men try to be tough, but it's not an easy thing to go through.
One of my favorite products of all time, it's an herb called Melissa.
Melissa, uh-huh.
Yeah, just like the female name Melissa, which I've always thought that Melissa is just a very beautiful girl name.
Yes, it is.
I mean, yes. I know that there are girls named Charlie, and I know that there are girls named Ashley, but I also know that there's boys named Ashley and boys named Charlie, and I'm okay with that. But Melissa, I have never seen a boy named Melissa.
You're right.
Evidently, it's unique to the female persuasion, so I like that.
Okay.
But there is an extract called Melissa extract,
uh-huh.
And sometimes for viral problems, which is what this is, they'll put in lemon balm.
Okay.
And so if you can find a salve at the health food store called Melissa Lemon Balm, that is what you want besides raw honey.
Okay.
But those are things. Now, if I could legally do this, I would, but I would give him a cocktail of vitamin C and B12 in the form of an injection, but I can't do that, so I'm having to go to Plan B.
Yeah, well, we have that at home, actually.
Well, you have what at home?
Vitamin B and C.
Well, then take advantage of those, and there's not going to be any harm. The other thing that I would say, and this is just for your consideration, you're probably going to agree with me that the skin is just a very incredible organ system. It does more than what I even realize. But there is a gland called the thymus gland. It's found just under the breastbone. I have a book full of pictures in my office because obviously I don't spell too well or write too well or read too well. So, but I can look at pictures. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll tell people, I said, have you ever heard of the thymus gland or the spleen? You know, just as examples. And they'll go, well, I've heard of the spleen, but I couldn't tell you anything about it. And I'm going, well, okay, well, let's take a look at it. Let me tell you about it just a little bit. Because if I examine a person and I discover that their thymus gland is the root cause of their problems, well, don't you think I'm going to talk about the thymus gland? Yes. And so sometimes I'll just show them a picture of it and I'll tell them right where it is. But what you have is the thymus gland is what protects you from shingles.
Oh,
my word, does it do. And actually, I don't know if you remember, but probably, I don't expect you to, but probably about a month ago on the radio, I read this interesting research that came from Russia, and all they did was they took older Russians. Now, just because this comes from Russia doesn't mean it's invalidated, just because they like to hack our political influence or election or whatever they're claiming. It doesn't mean this research is not valid, but it is interesting. Once a person hit about age 80, what they did was they gave these elderly Russians, and probably in Russia, 70s, probably really old. In America, maybe that might be 83 or 84. I don't know. But so I'm not trying to be negative, but there's a lot of issues and health problems over there that maybe we don't have over here. But, you know, everybody's got their strengths and everybody's got their weaknesses.
Right.
I think they drink quite a bit of alcohol over there. But if you're 70, you're probably considered just about the end of your lifespan in Russia. But what they did was they gave them thymus extract.
Okay.
Now, guess how much longer they lived on average when they took it every day?
A year or two?
Well, would a year be impressive?
No.
Well, I mean, it would be to me because I'm pretty easy to please. But if there was a drug that could give you one additional year of life, it'd be the top-selling drug in the world right now.
Right.
Because a person says, okay, you mean I can die tomorrow or I can live one more year? I think I'll take one more year. I got stuff to do. But they lived an average of 7 years longer.
Wow.
And I just am flabbergasted by that. But we don't really hear about this in the, you know, from the media or from doctors, except people like me, maybe. But thymus extract.
Okay.
Oh, my word. If I could give him thymus extract right now.
Okay.
I think that might be the biggest bang for the buck. So it's called calf thymus extract. Well, that's where they get the thymus. It's a glandular.
Yes.
And that's going to be their source. They're going to get it from a calf that's been taken to the processing plant, if I can say it that way.
Right. Okay.
The other thing that I would look at, I mentioned Melissa with lemon balm, and I realize I'm kind of adding on here, and I'm probably going overboard. I'm just thinking about what I would do if I were desperate for relief. Usually the salve is going to be kind of a... Everyone that I've seen has always been a green color.
Okay.
And I think they usually are going to use things like beeswax with olive oil, which maybe that's the reason why it's more of a green color. But a lot of plants are green anyway. But if you look at that and apply it, just see if it gives him tremendous relief from his pain. See if the honey gives him... I know honey's messy, but you know what? Desperate times call for desperate measures, right?
Exactly. And that's where we're at because it's just very painful. And
well, the other thing that I might look at is just a small touch of lavender oil. Even if you need to cut that just a little bit with olive oil, you could apply that topically probably with no issues.
Okay.
Sometimes the other thing that I'll look at is, do you know what these little flowers are called, marigolds?
Yes.
Almost anything that affects the skin that creates a sore or an infection or a wound. Of course, shingles, that's a viral infection. Calendula sometimes can work wonders.
Calendula?
Well, it's called calendula, but it comes from the marigold flower.
Okay.
So if you could just remember marigold, you can look it up, and it'll say calendula officinalis or something like that.
A marigold, yeah.
Yes, just, that's all you want. Just, you know, how some people, when they make herb gardens, they'll plant marigolds around it to keep bugs out.
Yes, we do that with our tomato plants. And
does it work?
I don't know. We hope. I mean,
well, does it keep snakes out of the garden?
No, nothing keeps snakes out of the garden.
Guess how many snakes I killed yesterday?
Oh, no, don't tell me. We don't like snakes.
Well, you know, when you have a young son that's barefoot and there's a snake just right in front of him, what are you supposed to do as a father?
Yeah, you're going to...
I don't have anything against a copperhead. I like them.
I do, too, but I'm going to choose my son over the snake.
You know what? I did not know how high he could jump until I saw him jump.
Oh, my gosh, there you go.
But, and I'm almost positive the snake was just merely reacting to him walking right over him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think, and I saw it from about, I'm going to say 15 yards out, because he was running ahead of me on the side yard. Mm-hmm. And when I saw him jump and scream, I saw the copperhead kind of make a lunge toward him.
Oh,
and,
man.
Of course, you know, when you're 5 years old, it's like hysterical screaming. I'm going, calm down, Tom, it's okay. He didn't bite you. But the first time, the snake kind of lunged toward him, but I didn't see the snake's mouth, you know, open up like he was going to strike and sink in the fangs. Anyway, he's okay. But, you know, what are you supposed to do? You know, my 10-year-old daughter says, Dad, did you know my favorite snake? I said, what is it? A dead one.
Yeah, that sounds that sounds good. I like that child.
What would you do if you saw a huge serpent in the Garden of Eden? What would you think of?
Oh, no.
Anyway, is this good enough, or do you want me to keep going?
Oh, no, that is very good. I mean, but for him. And then for me, I've got an issue on my right side, and I don't know if it's my, I don't know what could be bothering me back there, but it's very painful, and it's almost like when I stretch, it just hurts. It's just...
Well, more specifically, where on your right side? Is it your right shoulder blade or your right calf?
My right hip, I guess. It's okay. Above my hip. I can't, that's the thing, I can't pinpoint. It's like above my hip.
Does it feel like it's in a muscle?
On the right side? No, I don't think it's in a muscle.
Well, where would you point to as ground zero? Would it be the sacroiliac joint or your lower lumbar spine or your thoracic spine? Is it right there in your flank where the kidneys are kind of recognized?
Yes.
Do you have any discomfort
almost,
when you...
You know, where your waistline is?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just underneath your waistline.
Well, and, you know, really this is the only trick to it, is you're trying to determine where's the pain coming from. Is it muscle? Is it joint? Is it nerve? Is it tendon ligament? Or is it from some internal organ? I think a good doctor can do that rather easily. But in the meantime, tell me what your gut instinct is. Where do you think it's coming from?
Internal organ.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, the two, let me just break it down. The kidneys, as a general rule, they just don't give off a whole lot of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, there's a group of muscles called the hip flexors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of those before. A lady asked, or a man asked me this week, what do I do to stay in shape? I looked at him and laughed, and I thought, if you only knew how sedentary I was all day long. I think it's kind of hard when you sit down all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the hip flexors not working very well because I'm sitting down too much.
Mm-hmm.
But make a long story short, the kidneys tend to refer pain to that area.
Okay.
They can.
Uh-huh.
And so have you ever had any kidney trouble? That could be everything from kidney infections to bladder infections to high blood pressure to kidney stones, anything like that?
Well, I've had... kidney infection, maybe, you know, once, but
it's not like you've had them 25 times in a row.
No.
Okay.
And that's what's concerning is I usually don't have, and I drink a lot of water with lemon. And
well, I've got a simple experiment for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to take about 3 capsules of garlic, and I realize garlic is a very sulfur-bound herb, which means it's going to give off some odor.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Your husband may not want to kiss you on the lips after we talk on the phone today with the garlic. But if you'll take about three capsules of garlic, see if that pain starts to dissipate and go away.
Okay.
But usually this can't be that hard if you, well, I can't expect you to know all this stuff, but if you, do you know what a foam roller is? A foam exercise roller, I think the one that I have at the office I paid $4 for. So there's, it looks like just a big, fat chunk of foam, like a noodle that you would use to float with in a swimming pool the kids would play with. But you can roll up and down that area just to help dissipate stress. But if the garlic helps, then I would call that a kidney drainage remedy, which means we're trying to relieve any of the back pressure on the kidney. And sometimes it's just a good idea to eat lots of watermelon one day, because you're just trying to flush and clean the kidneys out, which is, I think it needs to be done periodically to everybody.
You know, I've been eating watermelon, and we've had, you know, different types of desserts, and I've reached for the watermelon over sweet desserts.
And do you think that you're better from consuming watermelon, or is
Yes.
still? Well, does this pain diminish and go away when you eat watermelon?
Well, I hadn't noticed because I just it just started, but now that you mentioned it, it probably has. Because
is your husband in good enough shape to rub your back where it hurts?
Yeah, his hands work pretty good.
Hey, well, we could just take some oil and he could rub that area down and see if it gives you tremendous relief.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
And that way we can kind of determine where it's coming from. But the kidney is probably my very first, you know, thing that I would think of.
Okay, and that's what we were thinking too. But then I thought, well, I drink a lot of water. What else can I do? So I like
watermelon.
Watermelon. But I do the garlic also.
Yeah. Now don't blame me or be upset with me if you have to run to the bathroom about 10 more extra times.
Oh no, no.
Hey, remember, it's just flushing and cleaning everything out. That's a good thing.
Yes, that is a good thing. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we listen to you as often as we can.
Where do you live?
We live in Quitman.
Oh, that's super far away.
Yes, it is.
Well, thanks for listening. Glad to have you.
You're welcome.
All righty. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. And good morning to Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Morgan.
Good morning. I have a question about, I have got lower leg swelling.
Are you on speakerphone by chance?
Yes.
Could you switch to just putting your ear and the phone to your...
Okay.
Please.
Okay.
Good. Now, what did you say?
Ankle swelling.
You're not on speakerphone, are you?
No,
Oh, I just keep hearing this massive echo. I'm sure nobody else can hear it. So ankle swelling, is it just one ankle or both?
More the left ankle.
Would you say that you're pretty physically fit and in good shape? Do you have good muscle tone, good circulation?
I don't know.
Okay. I saw a man this week from basically the Quitman area. Kind of like the lady that just called on the phone and said she's from Quitman.
Mm-hmm.
And when I weighed him a month ago, and he had fluid on his legs. He just did.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was 238 pounds a month ago. And I weighed him, nor he told me he only weighs 212 now. And I thought to myself, well, I guess a lot of that fluid's come off your legs, buddy. And he goes, yeah, it has. And that was one of his requests. His legs just hurt so bad, and he was so swollen in the knees. But when the fluid leaves the body, he could definitely tell that he was feeling quite a bit better. He just didn't have the pain inflammation. And one of the things that I had him do, and this is just one concept, I am not saying it's perfect for you, because if you have swelling just on the left ankle, then what I have to do is I have to kind of trace backwards. Is this because there's blood flow that's restricted on one side, or is there an organ on that side that's weak, like the kidneys, for example?
I think it's more so on the left, but they both are. But, I mean, my gut feeling is the venous insufficiency. I had in 2009, like the varicose vein ablation.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, like last night, I tried the Epsom salt bath.
Did that help?
And rinsed with cold, and that's helped a whole lot. I've elevated.
Oh, good. That's
smart.
And
then I've done compression socks, and that's all helped.
Yeah, and the only reason I even asked you if you have good muscle tone is because maybe the greatest role of your muscles is to pump venous blood back to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so the heart does a really good job of when it contracts, it's going to pump oxygen-rich arterial blood to your toes, but it's really the job of the muscle tone of all those muscles in your lower leg and your thigh. It's their job to get the blood back.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the muscle tone is not as ideal or as good as it should be, that's where you're going to have all this venous congestion. But mm-hmm. But I'm all for all the herbal remedies. If you tell me horse chestnut extract helps, I'm all for that. If you tell me butcher's broom is a great aid to you, I would do that. But one of the things that I had this man do is he let me starve him to death. Instead of three meals a day and Cokes and Dr. Peppers and snacks, he let me just put him on two meals a day of meat and vegetables. And what I was trying to do is I was trying to make it easy for his body to rid itself of all this extra fluid. And so mm-hmm. there is a concept called fasting. And what you're doing is you're just giving your body a rest, which I kind of like that idea. I mean, it's free, cheap. Just think, all the extra money you'll save not eating breakfast. No, I'm sort of joking. But yeah, all the things you did are great, but the end game here is if we can truly repair venous circulation. So would you say those compression stockings definitely helped?
I'm using the socks, new socks, and they help some, yes. They do help.
I know a lot of the top athletes in the world, they just literally swear. I don't mean it in a bad way. But they literally validate. There's some compression stockings by the, I think the brand name is called Skins, and mm-hmm. they just go over the lower leg. But man, will they do a number on pumping the blood back to your heart? That's where it belongs.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there any chance that your blood's a little bit thick and sluggish?
I would imagine. I guess.
Well, what I think of, and one of the things this man let me do with him from Quitman. He let me give him what are called natural B vitamins, and that's been something that I've just experienced over and over again. If a person has swelling and fluid, you can give them B vitamins, and if you let them fast a little bit, just eating two regular meals a day of meat and vegetables, what you do is you give the body a rest. But even if you were to, let's just say it this way, even if you were to look up on the internet B vitamin deficiencies, mm-hmm. you're going to find out real quick there's just a whole lot of venous congestion and fluid. But the blood, to me, it just becomes dirtier and thicker and full of debris and waste when you're low in B vitamins. Or another way of saying it is, if you do not have enough natural B vitamins to get the job done, what are you going to experience? You're going to experience a lot of debris that builds up in your blood. Anytime that you have debris and congestion in the blood or dirt, you got no choice but you're going to hold fluid. Your body, the solution to pollution is dilution, which means when your blood's dirty or polluted, you got to hold on extra water to dilute it or to detoxify it. So,
okay, so natural B vitamins, it's not like...
No, it'll say on the label. I mean, here's the two options you have. If you go to a store and you say, this is a B vitamin right here, just flip around to the back label. And these, by the way... I'm sort of laughing about this as I think about it, but let's just say that there's 48 natural B vitamins that the human body needs. When's the last time that you've seen a B vitamin that has all 48 B vitamins? When?
I don't know.
I think I could probably pronounce two B vitamins. I'll say thiamine and B6. No, I can pronounce more than that, but there's so many of them that we really don't have a lot of research on them. We just know that they're found within the cells and your mitochondria need them, and when you have them, you're much healthier. Just as simple as that. But if it's a synthetic B vitamin, it'll say vitamin B1. And then to the side, it'll say thiamine HCl or hydrochloride. Or if it was, say, B6, it may say pyridoxin or pyridoxal 5-phosphate. That's just a synthetic form of it. Or if it's a synthetic form of... let's just say vitamin B5, it'll say pantothenic acid in parentheses. But if it's natural, so we've got these scientific terms if it's synthetic, but if it's natural, it may say liver. Mm-hmm. Or let's just say they get their B6 from cauliflower. They have to list the source. Okay. And so if it was folic acid or folate, it may say the source is spinach. Okay. So that's kind of what you're looking for, natural versus synthetic. Because if you've ever, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but I think it might bear repeating one more time. These studies are long, long ago, not 2 years ago. But they've experimented by giving human beings that are perfectly healthy synthetic B vitamins. And what happens is they put the synthetic B, well, you take them orally and you swallow them. And then what they do is they start capturing the person's or the individual's urine. You tell me, what color does your urine turn to when you're taking synthetic B vitamins?
Bright yellow.
Exactly. And because what they find is the moment you put synthetic B vitamins in the body, and I am not trying to say they don't do good. I didn't say that. If I was in a POW camp in Vietnam, I would gladly take synthetic B vitamins just to have something. But the moment you take them, your entire metabolism and all the organs, they're working very quickly to kick them out and get rid of them. Now, you tell me what that means. What does it mean when the body's trying to kick them out at a fast rate? So, thus you have the fluorescent yellow urine. And so I'm not saying they don't do some good, but what I'm proposing to you is they tend to be extremely stimulating. Just like for some people, they feel exhausted and tired and they have to get one of these, you know, energy drinks at the store. Because they don't feel like they're, do they feel better? Yes, short term. Is there a price to be paid? Oh, yes. There's always cause and effect. But with natural, see, synthetic B vitamins, the moment you take them, and again, I'm just repeating myself, they probably do a lot of good. But the body is trying to get rid of them at a very high, fast rate, which means you can catch them in the urine really quick. So the doctors say, we just gave this person 50 milligrams of B1, and now we got 45 milligrams out within 2 hours. And so the question is, well, did the body do anything good with it, or is it just trying to get rid of it? But this doesn't happen with natural B vitamins. So the synthetic ones, your body kicks out real quick, but the natural ones, oh my goodness, I think the body and the cells are quite jealous and covetous for the natural B vitamins because it doesn't want to let go of them. It holds them and keeps them, which, I mean, I've got, do you realize how much room I have for improvement? I'd be the first to admit I've got lots of room. I've got a high upside potential here because there's a lot of stuff I don't know. But this is very intriguing to me because I'm asking myself, why would the body greedily hold on to natural B vitamins, but it's just so anxious to get rid of the synthetic ones? I think there's probably a mystery in there that probably hasn't quite been solved yet. But as far as I know, the only B vitamin that your body really holds in storage is B12. And there's no such thing as synthetic B12. They cannot synthetically make it. It can't be done. It's always natural. So even if you get you're getting natural B12 if you get B12 in a supplement. It's called cyanocobalamin or methylcobalamin or something like that. But that's natural. They get that from, I shouldn't tell you where it comes from or you'll never want to take it again. But let's put it this way. They have to pick it up at the sewage treatment plant. But anyway, enough of that topic. But a natural B vitamins, B12 is the only one you store. The rest of them, your body really doesn't have an ability to store. So what happens when you're low in B vitamins is the blood, in my opinion, begins to suffer. It just becomes dirtier. Oh, I know. To me, this is all easy to do. You could take a dark field or a light field microscope, take a drop of your blood, and we could go from grid to grid to grid on a microscopic slide, and then we could look for toxic crystallized debris in the blood that doesn't belong. It's easy to do. Dirt cheap, too. But B vitamins would be one thing that I think of, because usually I think of the liver when it comes to the left leg and ankle, but it could be the left kidney. I mean, I see these things all the time. All I got to do is just keep an open mind and just keep tracing back to where it comes from. But if all the symptoms point toward the kidney, then I would probably try to support that. And I know I sound like a broken record, but, oh, yes, I would love to strengthen and clean your kidneys and your veins and everything else. So do you go for walks every day?
No. Well, I walk around the house a lot.
If you looked up online those Skin's compression stockings for venous insufficiency and athletic performance, mm-hmm. and if you wore those and actually set your mind like Flint that you're going to start walking every day more aggressively, like out away from the house, that's when you'll probably see progress. The other thing that I've seen that's helped, and it's hard to get people to do this, it's hard to tell a person to start doing exercises and to do stretches to increase their strength. But that's what you need right now. The stronger you become, the less venous insufficiency you'll have. I can guarantee that. I've seen women and men develop very, very heavy leg, hairy legs once they start working out. Did you laugh at me because that's not appealing to you to have hairy legs?
Well, the blood circulation is
appealing. that's all I really meant. Hey, I didn't design the female body. I can't help but have hairy legs sometimes. No, but see, that would be encouraging right there. Mm-hmm. So, but in the meantime, the herb called horse chestnut, oh, that's proven to be beneficial. I personally think that from the mineral kingdom, I'm probably looking at things like magnesium and potassium. But those are really, really hard to beat. I mean, studies show that when somebody is very, very low in potassium, their blood becomes thick and dirty and they have strokes. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to people that have more optimal potassium, but how do you get potassium? You eat living things that God has made, right?
Yeah.
A Pop-Tart does not qualify as a great source of potassium. Even if it's banana flavored, it still doesn't qualify.
Okay.
But you might look into those Skin's compression hose, okay, just to see what you think about them, because that's what the top athletes are using, and they're just raving about the great athletic performance. I can tell you what I think. I think if you took a risk and you started training your body like you want it to improve, yes, it'll be very painful the next day. You'll have all this lactic acid buildup, but by the end of the week, you're going to say, oh my goodness, this is easier than what it was on Monday, and this is Friday. Your body, God has designed your body to adapt when you put stress on it. So it's good to put stress on it.
Okay.
I hope I helped you.
You sure did.
Well, thank you very much for your phone call.
Thank you.
I wish you the best. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to KBJS. This program is Health Essentials, the number here at the station. And we have officially a phone line open is 903-586-5257. Thank you very much for your phone call today. I appreciate it.
I would like for you to talk a little bit about kombucha and how it might help cardiovascular.
Okay. And
recently tried some, and we really like it.
Oh, and I love it, too. I think it tastes great. It's just a cultured, fermented form of tea. It can be made from almost anything. If you want to use Lipton green tea, it can be done that way. If you want to use just regular orange pekoe or black tea like we have in all the restaurants in Texas, you could use that. But you just add sugar to it, and you can add whatever fruit you want and just let it ferment and make. The two ones I like kombucha. I think I like kefir water better.
Well, how does that, what are the benefits from taking that?
Well, let me just discuss one or two benefits. Number one. You have to use living organisms like microorganisms to kind of ferment the sugar. And what they do is they give off things like glucuronic acid and propionic acid. And these are compounds that your liver can... See, it takes a lot of energy for the human body to make glucuronic acid or propionic acid, but you get these from kombucha. And so when you drink them, it can literally aid how your body cleans the blood and how you detoxify, which... The last time I checked, if the heart stops moving, then people don't live real long after that. So kombucha might be a ticket to helping clean your blood a little bit more efficiently, which that's good. That keeps the blood going.
Yes.
Did you hear me read that article about 3 months ago about old elderly mice they live in condominiums in the mouse nursing home, right? What they did was, well, in this particular study, what they did was they took the blood from young teenage mice and they injected it or did blood transfusions for the older mice. Guess what happened to the older mice? They became like teenagers again. Yes. They started running around the condominiums like they were crazy. They probably wanted to do all sorts of things, like get on the swing set and procreate. That's what mice do. But to make a long story short, when they infused them with young mouse blood, everything started working better, which I'm not trying to tell you to get a blood transfusion. But you're cleaning your blood when you consume kombucha or kefir water within moderation.
Okay. Well, we're trying to reduce some things in our life. My husband just had one of those calcium screening tests.
Oh, really?
Came
what
out
was the
really high.
What was the number?
In the 700s.
He may have
and
the world record.
Well, we're trying to find ways to not have to go further in the medical field, but to do it natural. And so this is one of the first things we started.
Well, can I ask
you? I'm not sure how.
No, and I think you're doing great, and I'm really proud of you. But can I ask you a question? That test your husband did, I am convinced it is just 100% spot on, super accurate. Everything that I've read and studied tells me I need to believe that number of 700, and I do. And I would take that very seriously. But did it show that any of his arteries in his heart were completely free of calcium? Or did it show that there's maybe one or two, that's where all the calcium score is coming from?
One was heavier than the other. One of them was like 366.
But, and there might have been other ones that were very low, is that right?
Right, right.
Well, what did the doctor tell you what that means?
Well, we haven't talked to him yet. We just got the test this week. But now, of course, they're wanting to schedule nuclear tests, and they're wanting to, you know, do some other things. I can see.
I don't know. I don't know why they're doing the nuclear. I don't even know why they're doing the nuclear test, except that it costs $9,000, because it's not more accurate than the calcium scoring test. And yeah, I realize as soon as I hang up with you, a cardiologist is going to call and say, but I like the nuclear test. Well, there's got to be a little bit more than just you liking it. And just because a person can pocket $9,500 for doing a nuclear test, it's not more accurate than what you just did for $49. Can you tell to treat that? Well, you have to, becoming educated is the first thing. Because, you know, do whatever sounds good to you or whatever sounds reasonable. But two or three things can happen here. Number one, you can go to the doctor and say, okay, what's your plan? Well, we're going to do a nuclear study. And then after the nuclear study is over, you can say, well, did the nuclear study show anything appreciably different than what the calcium scoring test did? And he goes, no, that one artery that was 360 is where I'm really finding the most of the problems. And you kind of think to yourself, well, I could have told you that. Goodness. So you can do that and then listen to what the recommendations are.
Okay.
And unfortunately, and I realize I'm very, very biased. You already know that. You've listened to me for how long now? I'm extremely biased. I am totally for remedies that rejuvenate the arteries of the heart and rejuvenate the heart. So
we know about Hawthorn. He's been taking that. We're heavy on cayenne and garlic.
Good, good, and good. You've made three excellent choices. One thing that you might want to consider, there's a fat-soluble vitamin called vitamin K2. Might want to look into that.
We take that.
There's another substance that I know for a fact, I've talked about it many times, but doesn't mean that you tuned in when I talked about it. It's called inositol hexaphosphate, or IP6 for short. Capital I, capital P, and the number 6. Because that actually helps remove that debris from the heart. And the other element that I can probably point to over and over again to help correct that is zinc.
Okay.
You've got to get the only way to do this is
30.
The only way to do this is you've got to lower the insulin levels.
Okay. And so he has diabetes.
Okie dokie.
Yeah.
So that means
you're very complicated.
No, you're not real complicated. I think you're just spot on, but we just need to, here's what we got to do, is we got to reverse the diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
This man that I saw yesterday, he weighed about 320 pounds, but he carries it well. But he told me yesterday, he said, you know what, I think I'm doing better. I said, what makes you say that? He said, I'm down to 278. I'm going, you are doing better. But as a general rule, you're not going to see a lot of change unless you can get the blood sugar down into the 80s. And that's not me trying to be critical or trying to be rude. I only have just a few moments with you on the radio, so I have to take advantage of it. But we've got to find a way to totally reverse the diabetes. And so one way is by ditching their plan. Their plan is to give you a whole bunch of small mini meals every day and a whole bunch of snacks and a whole bunch of drugs to keep your blood sugar stable. Mm-hmm. I don't like that plan. Because it doesn't, number one, it doesn't do anything to reverse diabetes. If anything, the more frequently you eat, the more insulin your body's going to require. And insulin causes calcification of the coronary arteries every single time. So we've got to find a way to do that. And the most successful regimen is usually two meals a day, skipping breakfast, no snacking. Just eat two meals a day, meat and vegetables.
No nuts or anything.
Well, no, I like nuts. I mean, I'm one big nut myself. But nuts can be good. You just have to make sure that if we can get the... See, here's what we'd notice. How much weight does your husband need to lose?
Well, he weighs 180, and he's a big exercise nut.
Oh, well, I'll take that. He's going to be the easiest...
He exercises more than normal, yeah.
Well, and we need to take advantage of that. Exercise is going to help burn off all that extra adrenaline and cortisol and insulin that he's got. And I would just really, really take advantage of that. So a combination of stretching every day, strength training, cardiovascular aerobic exercises, all those can be combined, but we just need to change it up every day. He needs to do a different routine every day. That variability will cause the greatest changes in his body. But if he could just find a way to give up all the grains, then we could have a breakthrough. He's not going to die if he gives up. Well... If he gives up corn and rice and bread and potato chips and potatoes, he just needs to eat vegetables and meat.
Okay.
Or is this something he's doing already and I just failed to pick up on that?
We were low on grains in the breads that we eat.
Well,
and of course,
personally, I have yet to see a diabetic ever reverse if they're eating grains every day.
Okay.
So I'm not trying, I'm just being real black and white with you.
Okay, vegetables, meat, and fruit?
I wouldn't eat any fruit if it were me. Not for a couple months. It just depends on how badly do you want this diabetes to disappear and go away. If you do, then what you're doing is you're giving your body a rest from having to process sugar. And that's one of the reasons why I love diets like paleo or ketogenic or low-carb diets. Because you've got to increase the fat content because fat doesn't require a drop of insulin. We want to retrain his body to convert fat for energy. Now, personally, I always view diabetes as a severe vitamin C and B vitamin deficiency. That's just my opinion.
Vitamin C and what?
B vitamins.
And B, okay.
Because what you have is you have a condition called lactic acidosis, and the blood just gets dirtier and dirtier if you're lacking those B vitamins and vitamin C. But you kind of accomplish that when you eat fatty cuts of meat. Like, does he eat plenty of eggs?
Yeah, we eat eggs. Uh-huh.
Well, I would rather eat high-fat cuts of meat. I'd rather him eat a ribeye steak and have asparagus and broccoli with butter on it than I would probably, lean ground beef that's hard as a boot or tough as a boot.
Okay. Well, those are some great suggestions. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for your phone call. And be sure and give all my love to your husband. I wish him the best.
Thank you.
How old is he, by the way, before you hang up?
Oh, he's 75.
Okay, well, tell him to keep going. He's doing great.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line again open, and we've got 5 or 6 minutes left. Good morning, and welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you very much for your call.
I'm calling on behalf of a friend of mine who lives out of state. She is in her 70s, and she's had a bladder infection all year, just about. You started to talk about antibiotics at the beginning of the program, and I was glad, but then you went straight to the phones, and so...
Well, can I tell you what they use? They use tea tree, lemongrass oil,
They've given her one after another, and she's probably taken, I bet you, you know, 8 rounds at least since the beginning of this year.
Well, we can starve the infection out pretty easily. That's what a ketogenic diet is. Even the most difficult kidney, urinary tract, ureter, bladder infections, that from the ones from hell that won't go away, a ketogenic diet will probably solve that very quickly.
Okay.
And so that's definitely one of the things that you could prayerfully, thoughtfully consider with your friend.
And would you recommend some of the supplements that you've been talking about?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's definitely worth a trial to try things like garlic and golden seal and echinacea. All those are perfectly fine. I love the extracts that come from cranberries. I like hippuric acid. Ribose sometimes works out great, but I don't think anything compares to starving the bacteria out. Of course, I love probiotics. I mean, I would probably flood her body with massive amounts of probiotics. But I'm trying to get rid of all... See, you have to understand, the number one reason... Actually, let me play it from two different angles, please. The number one nutritional factor that tells us if an infection won't go away is the amount of sugar a person consumes. And sometimes it's not just as simple as saying sugar, but it's probably more so foods that they're eating that the body may convert into sugar. So I'm dealing with that equation. And so the other thing is... And I know this sounds overly simplistic, but if I see a chronic infection, I'm thinking the body's just dirty. I don't mean anything bad by that. I'm not saying she's a dirty girl. I didn't say that.
Right.
But anytime there's dirt and debris in the urinary system, then the infection's just going to rule because it's got plenty of stuff to work with. And that's where maybe fasting for 3 days may... I've had people call me on the phone and say, Dr. Morgan, I've got like a... bladder and kidney infection, it won't go away. And I say, well, just try watermelon for 3 days, see what happens. And they go, oh my word, it's completely gone. I just went to the doctor. You know, and I get to hear every story known to man. I mean, this year I've already seen a woman that's had like 67 rounds of antibiotics for a bladder infection. 67? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Is that the world record?
I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't my friend, but she lives in Indiana, so I don't think she could have told you that. But so watermelon, a diet of watermelon, just watermelon.
Yeah, and just flush the kidneys out, because one of the things you're trying to get a woman to do with a bladder infection is. And I realize this may come across as a joke. I don't really mean it that way, but you know, I have young sons. I've seen them go TT in the backyards when no one's watching. Are you kidding? My 5-year-old could probably hit something 10 foot away. It's just he's just got great urine flow. And so with a urinary tract infection, the greater the force of the stream that comes out of the urethra, the more you flush out the toxic bacteria. It's just as simple as that. So if I can recommend every time that your friend goes to the bathroom, she needs to bear down and try to flush that stuff out. Okay. See, I'm probably a radical person. If it were me, I would probably take iodine every day just to try to help the immune system get over it, but I would sweat like there's no tomorrow, and I would exercise every day and perspire, which I don't know anything about Indiana, but for all I know, they have humidity just like we do here in Texas.
Yes.
But I wish her the very, very best, but have her just consider the idea of a ketogenic diet and tell me in 5 days if this is the greatest breakthrough she's had.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. You're listening to Health Essentials on KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.